to the inaugural edition of Local Point. This thank you, Councillor Richard Hales and Councillor Jan Matecki, for joining me. My name's Andrew Day. I'm the leader of Warwick District Council, and this is intended to be a really informal, behind-the-scenes conversation with the people that are shaping the policies and programs that are touching our lives right across Warwick District. And shaping our futures together. It's a chance to share with you our thinking, to engage, we hope, get your feedback as well. There will be an email address you can reach us on, and we've already had various questions put to us, which we'll be working on later in this session. But the local point is just that. It is to provide a local point. So if you imagine I'm at my kitchen table with my beer in hand, as I am, and I've got my mates Rich and Jan, and we are thrashing through some of the real issues that we're having to work on as councillors at the moment. So I've got, fortunately, two really important members of our cabinet. One deals with housing in Jan, and one deals with our finances in Richard. So I'm just going to be posing some questions and some thoughts and encouraging pretty open and candid conversation about where we're thinking and some of the, you know, the pluses and minuses and things we're wrestling with. We're very conscious that often decisions that that are made today, take sometimes years to work their way through the proper decision, you know, cycle that you have in a council, but they also affect generations to come. Now, you're Mr. Housing, but it's so much more than that. We're lucky. Do you want to tell us a bit about your role, what you do, you know, as a councillor, and the sorts of things you're grappling with at the moment?
Yeah, so as a housing assets portfolio, I don't only look after the council's housing stock, and we've got something like 5,500 council houses worth over £1 billion, but I look after the council's assets. And the housing team also looks after the private sector as well. So if there's any problems with private renting and things like that, we look after all those things. And another big important thing we look after is the homeless as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very difficult because, you know, there are one or two homeless people on the parade people see, and I've seen them myself. The biggest problem we've actually got is forcing them in. You can't force them in. We're working with them to try and get them in. But
over the pandemic, I know you did a great job, you and the team. It was over 30 people, rough sleepers, encouraged to come in into safe accommodation. Why are we seeing one or two appearing on the parade again?
These people have some intense issues. And I think the good thing about the pandemic was that it actually proved something. And I actually went and visited the homeless before the pandemic, the November before, and I was out at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, I remember.
doing a count. And I spoke to a few of them because I couldn't understand why they were out in the street when we had William Wharsgrove House, which was half empty.
Mm.
There's a roof there, there's heat there, there's a kitchen there, yet they chose to live out in the street. And it came out, a lot of it was down to trust issues. And so I was already talking to the housing team that maybe the model we had at William Wharsgrove wasn't quite right, having these dorms to accommodate more people. So we were already talking about maybe giving people rooms, you know, almost like a hotel, a room, maybe if you get an ensuite, that's great. But just somewhere they can close the door and be private. And of course, when the pandemic hit and we housed them all in local hotels, it showed that when they did have their own rooms, they actually stayed there.
So the fact we got some central government funding to enable the move into the hotel rooms really broke that cycle for those 30 odd. I know there was one great guy who just wouldn't come in, who was living, it was an ex-army bloke or something, he was living in the bush and it would be Kenilworth, wouldn't it? But didn't want to come in because that was a lifestyle choice. He was doing that because he just didn't want to have a roof over his head. But the other ones that came in, the policy was very much, was it housing first? Was trying to get them into regular council housing?
So yes, and a lot of them are still in temporary accommodation while we're sorting out housing for them. And many of them still can't handle the responsibility of having their own rented places. So we are working with them, we're not pushing them, but this is the model we're actually moving forward. So We want to put them in their rooms on their own. And I say this to everybody, that nobody needs to be out in the street. We can accommodate everyone.
So in many ways, it's not just about a roof over the head. When you're in housing, of course, you've got security, but you're also then more accessible for health services and support, because these people have some really complex and challenging personal circumstances, don't they, very often?
There is a lot of care that goes in. We have, and I've got to say a big thank you to the voluntary sector, because the voluntary sector are there. They are working with us and they are speaking, because quite often they can engage a lot easier with them, you know, because they quite see council workers as authority, whereas some of the charity workers, you know, they see you more on a friendly basis. So they work with us to break down those barriers, and they're there to help them to make sure that they get the help that they need. If they have addictions or health issues or anything like that, we're offering the whole support package, so that hopefully they'll be able to stand on their own two feet again.
But that's where the partnership approach works really well, because the problem that you have, you know, because the human being is the end of the day, and there's some issues there that actually that they see the councils as almost like an authority.
Yeah.
And the fear there in terms of actually, you know, engaging, because there may be situations behind that, you know, it might be drugs, it might be drink, it might be other issues as well, that they don't want to be part, you know, almost become part of the system.
Yeah.
So that's why I think the partnership work that goes on with the voluntary sector is really important. Yeah. Because actually they can engage in a way that you know the councils can't, because they're not seen as being this authoritative, you know, state going in there.
They've been absolutely marvellous.
Yeah, they have.
So do you, just moving on then, I mean, we're coming out, or we hope, out of this pandemic. We're trying to get back a sense of civic pride with, you know, the Commonwealth Games going on and various other activities. So I walk down the parade and I see two guys sleeping in, you know, in the doors of different shops. What's going on there? Why is it we've got people returning to the street?
It's mainly issues. Normally, it could be mental health issues, that they would rather be out there. Mm. It's what they've been used to for many years, and especially when the warmer weather comes, it's a place that they're comfortable with.
Mm.
They don't have any rules. They don't have to go in. There's no door to worry about or anything. It's just stress free for them.
But it's also the fact that they can be on their own. So again, sometimes actually being in a group of people actually has that fear around safeguarding and issues around there.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, if they go into a dorm, there's the fear there in terms of the safeguarding and what's going on there. So, I mean, you know, Jan's put it really well. It's incredibly complex in terms of, you know, where people are with it. And some people, you know, the guy in Kenilworth just likes, you know, he's got PTSD, you know, was in the army, you know, saw stuff there, and just literally, you know,
that's his safe,
that. And
his
that's a safe place.
Yeah.
And sometimes people walk down, you know, the parade or other areas and will judge. And actually, there's you know, it's not saying it's a choice, but sometimes it's where they are with those lives.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really important that you know, it would be the voluntary sector or the district or the county or the healthcare, that these people get the right level of access to those services that are required.
And our streets are remarkably safe. They're not crime-free, but because of things like our CCTV, etc., and the care that goes in from the voluntary street pastors as well, I think they're feeling, I think, safe on the streets. It's interesting as well, because we're moving away from a cash-based society, aren't we?
Yeah.
We pay for everything on cards or our phones, and I think that's actually having an impact on people begging in the street. Although I have to say, I did see a guy down in Oxford Street in London who had his own terminal.
I thought
it was quite entrepreneurial. I thought this is the way to go. But that's another factor that's coming into this. And I am also aware that sometimes, you know, in giving to people on the street, you are actually doing them harm, because you are bringing to them an opportunity to be tempted off to, you know, with drugs or with other things. And there isn't the same need, financial need, as many people perceive, because of what the council has offered in providing housing and support and charities like Helping Hands and so on in meals and so forth. So.
But it's such a complex problem, though, isn't it? I mean, the problem is people look and think it's a really simple, you know, you put someone up in a house, it's a really simple issue, and you resolve it. And the problem some days is everyone looks at a very binary choice in terms of, you know, doing that. And it's not. It's incredibly complex in terms of the needs of these people. And again, you know, sometimes people forget they're human beings. And,
that's,
you know,
so
one
true.
Of the great things through the pandemic was the support that we gave our neighbours and our families and our friends and people in neighbourhoods, and that spirit came through. Mm. And that's, you know, I think, you know, it is coming through from the work, you know, like you say, across that, you know, that you see big issue sellers. It's that support mechanism that you find within, you know, across the district, in terms of this sense of place, you know, that people want to help other people.
They do.
It's one of the nice things of one thing living in the area.
That was one of the pluses of the pandemic, wasn't it?
You know, and Richard got it right. It is all about getting people the support. Just putting them in a house isn't the solution.
No.
And I know some people say, you know, what's your policy on this, that, and the other? Why don't you do X, Y, and Z? But everyone has got a unique
situation.
So we actually tailor the support package for each person.
Yeah.
What works for one isn't going to work for another. And we're talking about you giving money, and I was on a LGA course about homelessness.
That's the local government association. Just to translate, because there's a lot of that acronyms
and somebody, one of the other fellow councillors from another district, I thought this was absolutely marvellous. They ran a campaign that said real change, not small change.
Mm.
So in other words, rather than giving the homeless person the change that they're not really helping, all you're doing is enabling them quite often. If you want to give it to one of the charities, because they can then channel the money to where it's really needed.
And we are lucky, we've got fantastic, as you said, charitable partners here. Yeah, and turning, because you've got a very wide and challenging brief in the work you do. When you look at our housing provision, and you look at the £1 billion of council houses that you and the team care for, what are some of the tough choices that are coming up, and where do you see our policy around that massive public asset going? What are the opportunities? Because, I mean, talk a little about the local housing company as well.
Right, so one of our targets that we have, and we haven't really shared this, so here's a first, and the first one to you is...
Breaking news at the local point.
Yeah. We want to build another 2,030 homes by 2030.
Oh, that is a neat round number. Even I will remember that.
Yeah.
2,030 more council homes, that's social housing, by 2030.
Yeah, that's our target. So that's serious. That's what we're looking
for. And that is a mix of types of homes?
It will be shared ownership, affordable rent, and social rent.
Okay.
So for those who don't know, social rent is what used to be known as your sort of council housing.
Okay, so it's across all affordable housing.
Yeah, and it's... it's actually called the formula rent now, and it's based on average rental prices in the area and also wages.
Okay.
So, and it's typically around about 40% of market rents. We then have affordable rents, which are at 80%.
Yeah.
And then we have shared ownership, where somebody can actually own part of the house and then pay a rent for the bit that they don't own, and then they can top up the percentage
build up their equity.
So that is actually one way that people can get on the housing ladder. But another one that people probably don't know, and we don't actually do, and it's something I've really got to look into, and it's come about, I've seen another scheme elsewhere, that is under the National Planning Policy Framework, or NPPF.
Oh, well done.
the definition of affordable housing extends beyond just the rental and shared ownership, which is what I think our local plan concentrates on. You can have market affordable homes, which offer a minimum of 20% discount of the market rate, and then that stays with the home, the renters.
So if I took advantage of that and I bought a house in Warwick, if we were offering this at 20% discount against the market price of a three bedroom semi, and I decided I wanted to buy that, and I got a 20% discount on the market price because it was part of this scheme, then when I came to sell that in 5 or 10 years time, again, I would only get 80% of the market price, but I would still get the uplift on the 80 on that 80%, wouldn't I?
Yeah. And you're not paying a rent like you do with the.
But it's a way of trying to address some of our, you know, we've got expensive housing around here, and how do we get people, particularly, you know, some of our young, some of our, you know, some of the talent we need to keep, in this area? How do we get them into the housing market? So that's one really good idea.
And I think what we'll have to do is we'll have to look at the local plan. As you know, we're looking at a new local plan. We might have to look to maybe introduce that, maybe swap over the shared ownership with that, because from what I gather, shared ownership doesn't seem to be as popular as it could be. So it could be that we mix swap the mix around and look at doing something.
Because our local plan, we provide 40% affordable housing. So 40 out of every 100 houses that are built are there to be affordable houses. Now, there is a stock of that that is owned and bought by the council as council housing, a stock of that that goes, as you say, to affordable rent, and a stock of that that goes to this shared ownership scheme. So what you're looking at is maybe working through the local plan to vary that mix and have this scheme that allows people a discount, really. Do they need to prove local links? So I couldn't get my 20% if I couldn't prove that I lived in Warwick District or worked here or had family here or whatever.
So the same rules would apply. Okay. So you'd have to have a local connection and you have to demonstrate a housing need. That's the thing as well. So that's part of the local plan. So you still have to do that.
It's just, I think it's particularly tough for young people with student loans, facing, you know, high interest rate borrowing at the moment, and it's only going to get worse over the next few years, to just get anywhere near the chance of buying a modest home in Warwick District. It's a tough step. So that's useful. That's really
useful,
good.
But I think we need to be sort of cautious that we already know the viability issues that we already have. That developers are already complaining about the 40%. I don't think it could be additional to that. It would have to be within that remit.
Yeah.
But we just have to make sure that it still remains viable for builders to maybe do it as an option. So it could be something that we look at, that maybe it says shared ownership and or
but
affordable market rents.
Going back to your point, it's really important that we keep our young talent here so that when people finish, you know, schools and colleges, or, you know, if they move away and want to come back and raise families because of the high quality, schools that we have, within the area, it's having that accessibility, in terms of doing it. So I think that's really good. A question I've got on the 2030 homes. So is that going to be spread across the district or?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're not thinking of creating a brand new super, city in terms of doing that.
Matetskyville
in terms of doing that.
That would be an idea. No.
Still the road names now in terms of doing that.
I mean, it's so, that's going to be a huge makeup of different sort of homes. So you mentioned our housing company.
Yeah, it's called Milverton Homes.
Milverton Homes.
You got this set up with colleagues, about a year ago now?
A little bit longer than that.
A little bit longer, And you're in the market already. You're starting joint ventures in Kenilworth.
So
do you want to explain what that is a bit more
first? Yeah, so it was an idea that I brought forward probably about 2.5 years ago. It was on the table, and the pressures of offices, it was just moving along slowly. And I didn't understand why we were looking to buy Section 106 houses from builders all the time, why we couldn't do what the builders are doing, have market homes.
So Section 106 houses, just for everyone's benefit, when a builder builds a new estate, they, under the agreement, the planning agreement to build that estate, they have to provide 40% affordable homes. Yeah. And our housing revenue account, Jan and your team, you would go in and buy some of those 40% of those houses.
We would go in and we would
bid to buy,
along with all the other housing associations. Okay. Some we'd get, some we wouldn't. So we were in a bit of an auction. Mm. So we'd have to work out what we felt was a reasonable value for those homes. So we weren't getting the homes at possibly the best prices we could.
Yeah.
And the builders were still making a profit out of this. So I said, why don't we start building our own sites?
Mm-hmm.
Work with builders. We can sell homes market value, the 60%. We're not in a bidding war for the 40%. We would keep them for the council, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And through the development on Europa Way, which we had a build out what's called the triangle, if anybody goes along Europa Way, opposite the old BMW dealers, you'll see a load of houses with solar panels on the roof.
Ah, so that
those are all council houses.
Are they Milverton Homes houses?
No, they're not.
They're in the housing revenue.
So that started the joint venture. So
okay.
Because we asked the builder to build them out, and we gave them our specs. So the other thing is a climate emergency.
Yes.
We didn't just want to build them as Vistry Homes homes. Mm. We wanted more insulation. We wanted air source heat pumps. We wanted solar panels. We wanted them energy efficient, and we wanted them green.
Mm.
And we managed to do that. So.
So these are council houses that are to a higher environmental spec than the full market houses that you go and buy.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. So that means they're going to have lower bills this winter.
Yeah. And if
brilliant.
So taking that model one step further, we did exactly the same with the Section 106 housing in Bishop's Tatchbrook.
Yeah, great place, by the way. Absolutely fantastic.
With AC Lloyds.
Yeah.
And AC Lloyds have come back and said to us that they wished that the market homes were built to the same standard as ours, and they've actually said that all new developments of theirs will be built to the same standard as ours.
Wow.
So here's a question for you, to anyone listening to this.
Mm.
I'm sure there'll be lots of people, but to the people listening to this, so I'm a taxpayer in Warwick District. What's the advantage of Milverton Homes to me as a taxpayer?
Yeah, good one.
So Milverton Homes is going to be two angles to Milverton Homes. So the joint venture that we're in with Vistry in Kenilworth, the council has lent money to the joint. Well, it's lent money to the Milverton Homes, which has put it into the joint venture. The council has to lend the money at market rates.
Mm-hmm.
The council can borrow the money at preferential rates for house building. So there's a differential between what the council is paying and what it's charging. So straight away, the general fund is going to benefit from the profit of the interest of the money it's loaned. So that's the first bit of income.
And we're talking in the order of £1 million a year or something of that at the moment on the first joint venture?
Yeah.
I mean, just to put things in context, I know you've got to come to finances in the moment, Rich, but where our general fund is what, 18 to 19 million quid a year?
Yeah.
That's quite helpful, isn't it?
Well, if you look at it, you know, it's an additional 5% coming in.
And it's secure as well.
Yeah, it comes in.
Okay, so that's quite nice. I like that. I'll take that, yeah.
So the second element of developing out is, because it's a joint venture, Milverton Homes and the builder will make a profit on the market homes.
Okay.
That profit is shared equally between the two, and then Milverton Homes as an independent company can declare a dividend if it wants, which will go into the general fund after taxes are paid, they could reinvest the money into future schemes so they don't have to borrow so much. So there's a lot it can do, and this isn't costing the taxpayer a penny.
Okay.
It really is a great scheme. And then the other arm of Milverton Homes is that we're looking to buy new properties off developers that we can rent out at market rents.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of the normal council houses rental income just going into the housing revenue account and it's frozen in there and it's
you can't use it for other council needs.
This will be income that's going to be generated into the general fund.
So that can help us run the council and keep the tax down.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So if it's pitched Milverton Homes in, like, you know, a 10 word, in essence, from what it sounds like, Milverton Homes means that there's money, so it doesn't cost a taxpayer anything at all.
Mm.
There's money coming in to the council tax that we can reinvest in other services, and we are building better quality environmental homes.
That's the point. Are these homes that Milverton are building in joint venture with other developers, are they to the Warwick standard that you were talking about earlier that AC Lloyds adopted?
So at the moment we're still working on the Warwick standard, and I don't want to pull the rug under from our program advisory boards. We're going to have a meeting to talk about what they actually want in that standard, but before we actually, because the Warwick standard is a huge standard.
Yeah, it is.
It goes into everything, like, you know, where the socket should be positioned and everything like that. So but from the climate emergency, yes, they are net zero in operation. We've upped the bar, and we're hoping that others will see what we're doing and see that it can be done.
And I guess by entering the market, by demonstrating that there's a strong business case to support a more sustainable form of building, we're not only making more money for the taxpayer out of this, the council taxpayer, but we're also improving the quality of the environmental quality of our homes. And hopefully that's affecting the private sector to think, as you were saying about AC Lloyd, they're thinking, hello, this isn't a bad idea, that people like this and everyone wins.
And it's helping with the fuel poverty situation. When you think that people that tend to go into social housing are some of our less well off in society, and so they're going to struggle more with fuel poverty.
So this winter, that's really going to make a big difference. Yeah. I can see that. Good point.
But also from a council point of view, and again from a taxpayer point of view, you will often hear councils across the country talk about the fact that obviously funding is drying up and there's issues about being able to maintain services.
Mm.
So by doing this and what Jan's done there, without blowing smoke up in.
Yeah.
But actually what he's done is almost secure the future work districts by taking a proactive approach. Rather than sit there and just kind of going to the government all the time with a begging bowl saying we need more money, we need more, it actually means that...
So how much money do we get from central government to run our council? The revenue support grant amounts to zero. And we've had the benefit, as I understand it, just recently announced that we're about for the first time to be assured that about a 2-year settlement. So we now know for the next 2 years we will get nothing from the government.
Which is great. So at least you know where
at least
stands.
We know where we stand. But there was talk, wasn't there, about
your money back?
Yeah, about us having to throw into the pot. Yeah. So Rich, thanks Jan, by the way, and I'm going, because that segues nicely into the piece around the council's finances. And it's been a really challenging time. Many people are looking at their own family budgets, and business budgets are also pretty stretched coming out of COVID, of course, but then of course with the Ukraine war and the heating bills and cost of living crisis. So we set our budget back in February. There was some pretty courageous, you put forward some interesting ideas there that got through with cross-party support for many of them. Do you want to take us through the council's finances and the budget and how you approach this coming year?
Yeah, so I suppose in terms of the way that it was viewed from a council point of view, is obviously, as a council, we have statutory services we have to deliver. So whether it be housing, whether it be planning, whether it be obviously, the waste collections, whatever it is, we have to provide those services. But fundamentally, we are responsible to the taxpayer.
Mm.
So therefore, the reason why we chose to freeze council tax this year is because we appreciated the challenges that everyone's going through, not just
But Matt, everyone's council tax bill went up. When you say we froze council tax, what exactly does that mean?
So the way that council tax is built up, so if you pay £100, for instance, the way that's split is there's four partners in there.
Yeah.
So you have your local parish or town council, who might take, a penny or two penny. You've got your police, the authority, your police crime commissioner, who will take, roughly, 10p.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your county council, who in essence, responsible for roads and education, who will take, 70 odd p in terms of doing that.
Oh,
and then
from
a district point of view, we take, slightly less than 10p. So, so when you look at it from our point of view, there's four partners in there. So the police and crime commissioner went up by...
it's nearly 10%, 10%,
9.9%. You had the county went up by, 3%.
Yep.
Overall, obviously with adult social care. The towns and parishes roughly went up by...
Varies depending where you are.
Where you are in terms of it. But as a district, we chose to freeze our proportion.
So the average council tax for the average property, how much is the Warwick District resident in that property paying every year?
So for Warwick District, if you're on a Band D, so that it goes Band A to Band H. So council's predominantly kind of gone Band D in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So Band D, you pay £176 a year.
And actually, that's interesting because 75% of properties in Warwick District are Band D or smaller.
Yeah.
So £176 a year.
Yeah.
And so for that £176 a year, you get your planning service, which I'm sure everyone's very excited about, but it's got to be paid for.
Yeah.
But you also get your bins taken away.
Yeah.
You get your parks.
Yeah.
You get all the environmental health support.
Yeah.
You get the leisure centres.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And leisure facilities and all of those benefits.
Yeah.
And so the list goes on. So that's Pretty good value, actually, I would say that. But you froze, so that was frozen for this year. We didn't pay any more this year than we did last year.
No, I didn't say it was frozen, you know, with cross-buy support, you know, in terms of doing that. If you work out, you know, it's £3.50 a week.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, for your parks to be mown and, you know, and kept
your bins taken away.
Your bins taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone will use planning as a service. You know, if you need housing options there.
But we get other income, don't we? But we've obviously got, thankfully now, the local housing company throwing some money in the tin in the general fund. Where else are we taking income?
So we get a small proportion from business rates.
Yeah.
Which again is a tax that I know has been looking at centrally in terms of what happens there,
mm-hmm.
because it is quite an old-fashioned tax in terms of the way that things are done there. I know
especially
that,
today.
You know, when you speak to businesses, you know, the thought that you're going to move from, you know, a business of, I don't know, 100 square foot to 200 square foot, and you're going to pay more on that, you know, when you're trying to employ more people and develop it. I know, you know, central government, you know, depending on what's going on, but are certainly looking at it in terms of doing that.
Yeah.
We get income from our car parks,
yep.
from the charges in terms of doing that.
Yeah.
But they're the main areas that we get income from, apart from.
And then the other charges that we levy for, I don't know, events, for example, in our green spaces, that's essentially to meet the cost of cleaning up and running that space, isn't it?
It's just to cover the costs. So you know, there's some events that we don't charge for. You know, if the community events, there's some events that we'll charge a small point, but that's just to cover the cost. But that's, you know, mainly around the fact that if you've got an event, you know, Leamington, you know, it's not fair that a resident lives in Rowington, you know,
goes
to that event, it's going to cover it. So there has to be a proportion in terms of ownership. You know, you can't sit there, going back to the point earlier on, and sit there and say, you know, if you're running an event, there's a very small charge to go and clean up after the event. You know, if when I have my children's birthday parties, I have to clean up after them in terms of doing that.
You do.
You know, that's what you have to do.
So during COVID,
we
were the recipient of grants from central government that we then had to process and get out to all sorts of people in different organisations, didn't we? And it was pretty full on. If I remember rightly, I mean, some of our officers were working, you know, late into the night through weekends to get these things out. What's the wash up? How did we finish? Did we do well as a council, and how's that impacted on our local businesses?
No, I mean, you know, it's always good here for, you know, as a local councillor to sit there and say this is what we did, but you know, the team at Warwick District, in terms of the work that they did, and you know, we're not naming names.
No, we can't.
But if we were, you know, there's two people who you know, and teams that work their way through. So in essence, the way the government did it is we got this tranche of money and got told this is a scheme, you've got to do it, and then in essence we had to implement it with you know, very little guidance in terms of what to do. And they worked, you know, over bank holidays, over weekends into evenings to get the money out. And there's a real sense, going back to the conversation earlier on, about, you know, the pride and wanting to look after people. And not just civic pride, but that pride from officers and from the district to really help them. So, you know, there's what, 360 odd councils, you know, in the country. You know, we were in the top, you know, top 10, top 15 of getting the money out, and that's what it's all about. You know, it's great to get the money from central government, but you know, but we've turned out nearly £70 million to businesses,
and
that's not just through, you know, government schemes, it's also through schemes that we've created.
Yeah,
so we've had, you know, £2 or 3 million that we've allocated to areas that we knew that were specifically struggling.
Yeah,
so we've either done that in terms of putting money into, you know, giving away, you know, car parking charges for a couple of months to encourage people back into town centres,
mm-hmm.
or it's about targeting businesses in the retail sector who were so, you know, horrendously hit during COVID,
mm-hmm.
To try and help them, you know, open up, because, you know, a lot of businesses were missed by central government. So, you know, they targeted, you know, the businesses that pay business rates, but if you don't pay business rates, so if you're, you know, you get small business rate relief and you don't pay them, but you have a shop that, in essence, you know, these are normally people that, you know, their business is their life. So they work there 6 days a week and they go and open up and they maybe have one member of staff. You know, we gave the similar level of money to them as main government gave to those businesses. So
can I just go back to your fees? I mean, first thing, you mentioned our leisure centres, and for a brief spell, I had neighbourhood services.
Oh, you did.
In my little portfolio, I was looking after, and I visited the leisure centres at Newbold Common and St. Nick's Park. And if anybody hasn't been there, go and see it, because, you know, I remember going to St. Nicholas Park and their gym was like a broom cupboard about as big as this with a couple of bits rusty kit in there.
It's not anymore.
It rivals it's private gyms. I mean, I used to be a member at the Warwickshire, and there's no way I'd go there now. If I was looking for a gym membership, I'd go, it's a third of the price.
They'll be back at you. They'll be back at you. Councillor Jan Matecki, Warwickshire. You can have a chat. But you are right, because it is the big thing we made a decision on as a result during the pandemic. The well-being of our residents was top of the list, and getting our leisure centres open at the very earliest opportunity, when they it wasn't viable in many cases, that cost us quite a lot of money, but it had massive public benefit. But some of the things we didn't get right, I mean, I couldn't foresee, I don't think anyone could foresee, the amount of use our parks got and the amount of rubbish that we had to clear up. I mean, they were going flat out. The barbecues, the bits and that. We got there, but I mean, we did take a lot of flack for that. But how are we meant to guess that suddenly, instead of partying at home, everyone's going to go into the parks and start barbecuing? The other one, which was great, and I know it in my own close, sorry guys, is the amount of recycling and particularly bottles, because we weren't going out to the pub or to restaurants to eat. We were doing it at home. And of course, you know, and that just drove the tonnage through the roof. And thankfully, the waste management team managed, all but for one round of green waste, we managed to keep all that running, which was a real godsend. I'm so pleased that was possible.
Did I pay a heavy price for that?
For the one round? Well,
more way than one.
I know. It's really tough.
But that's where, you know, again, from a public point of view, it's very easy to criticise councillors. But again, you know, councillors have lots of people working behind them. And the pride, you know, you go back to emptying the red bins. I mean, it wasn't only, you know, beer bottles and you know, wine bottles, but also the amount of packaging that people had because they couldn't go to shops. So they're ordering things online, you know, whether it be, you know, gym equipment or, you know, clothes. God bless Claire. Clothes in terms of doing that. You know, the boxes that we got, and they took all of it. You know, I mean, the work rate.
And there's only a certain number of waste lorries that we've got. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was the... But then the other one which surprised me was planning applications. We got like a 40% increase in planning applications because we're all sitting at home thinking, we're going to work from home now. We're going to design a wraparound and put a home study in or something. And bang. And then the guys are desperately trying to... We forget too that literally in 24 hours, over 500 council staff moved out of Riverside House and had to keep the council running. The IT team must have been going ballistic, just trying to get us all connected. Do you remember the first cabinet meeting we had? I got on my laptop, a Skype, and we were all there just on our phones and trying to keep going. And how quickly the IT guys got us up and running and the world got adjusted to Teams and everything. It was a hell of a run. But it's left a bit of a legacy for us as far as our town's concerned and how we approached the budget this year. Just coming back to that, Richard, because you know, you did some great work talking with other council leaders, other political group leaders, and some ideas were coming forward, which I am so pleased we've had in our budget. Can you share with me a bit about that and how that's played out?
Yeah, so you know, one of the things that we spoke about was reference a hardship fund. So it was something acknowledging, you know, the fact that even back in February, I think, you know, people could see that the struggles that people, you know, were having. So there were two things that we did, and credit here to you know, Jonathan Nicholls, God bless him, and you know, who was a leader of the Labour group in Leamington and Warwick District, and was a phenomenal individual. You know, could see things through, you know, and find solutions to problems really easily. And a couple of ideas that he came forward with that we worked with was number one was around that we gave £45,000 to food banks.
Yep.
So we gave them to
15 grand for each.
So in essence, the idea was to, you know, to support those food banks. No one, you know, in this room or anywhere wants food banks to exist.
No,
you know,
of course not.
No one sits here and says, you know, it's right that food banks exist. But, you know, as a council, that, you know, we've tried our best, you know, which other, you know, other places haven't done, but to support those.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things we did. And then we also created this £200,000 hardship fund. So we took money out of savings, out of reserves, and in essence, I've put that forward in the last couple of weeks to residents, reference the energy crisis.
So you added, we got a grant from the central government again to distribute to, it was revenue, a housing sort of heating support fund. Was it about 150 quid?
So to start with, we got it in terms of if you're in band A to D, you got £150 off it. But the problem with that was that that missed out, obviously, you know, people predominantly, you know, who might have been in bands above that.
Yeah.
But it might not, you know, again, it might not be people that have very swanky lifestyles. It might be people that actually, that, you know, live on their own, or, you know, are in houses that have moved through that, that process, just because actually when they bought it 40, 50 years ago in Leamington or Warwick or Kenilworth or, you know, Bishop's Tatchbrook or out in Remington or the parishes, that value's gone up by so much that actually they've now gone from a B band up to an E or E to an F band, so they were missed out on that, but they're struggling as well. So the government gave this £150 for A to D. We then have topped that up through the money we had in reserves, mm-hmm. that we've kind of taken out of the you know, the money that was signed for a rainy day.
Mm-hmm.
But then we've also then targeted that money, rather than give it, you know, 10 quid to everyone, mm-hmm. we've targeted that specifically people who are either on council tax reduction,
yep.
or people that are severely disabled, or people who are carers.
Yeah.
So we've tried to target, you know, it's only, you know, £150 that we've got to those people.
But you've widened the pool of benefit.
So we've got all the bands,
mm.
and in that area, so all bands A to H, but if, you know, if you're, you know, severely disabled or you're a carer,
yeah.
this money's available to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can't, unfortunately, you know,
go further than that,
but we might in the future. But the key thing is trying to help people the most.
You've got it up to £200?
£200, yeah.
£200. So yeah. that's more than these households, if they're in a band D house, are paying in council tax to Warwick District.
Yeah.
You're going and giving it back.
Yeah.
How could you do that, Richard House?
Well, you know.
There you go.
But it's
because of the benefits of doing things like Milverton Homes. Dare I say, some of the savings we took in the merger steps we've had with Stratford, and some of the other tough decisions, that we have got that discretion to step in right now.
Can I address the elephant in the room with you, Richard? So as I'm making all this money with Milverton Homes,
some people,
well, I've not only giving the money away, but some people might be asking, well, why are we being charged money for our green bin collection?
Ah, good call. I can go there. I mean, the waste management contract, because we're just about to see it start on the 1st of August, so this is just before that. It's obviously a big step, the 1-2-3+ system. But the fundamental point was, we had the current waste management contract that's just about to finish was costing us roughly £3.5 million a year, and we're on a really good deal, and it ran for 8 years. But everywhere we turned, and you know all too well, Jan, because you were leading the charge, and we were tearing over spreadsheets and going out. We delayed going to a new contract. We looked at how we could work. And in the end of the day, the most cost-effective solution, working with Stratford for that economy of scale, including investing in this at Sherbourne, you know, with a new recycling centre, was going to cost us £5.5 million, roughly. So on a general fund budget of 19 million, we suddenly had to find another £2 million. So the choices were pretty simple. We either start cutting services or we find other ways to bring income in. Now, thanks to Milverton Homes, thanks to some of the other savings we've got through so far, we've been able to find a fair chunk of that 2 million. But equally, the green waste is a completely discretionary service. There are many residents that don't take it, have never taken it, and don't benefit it. There are also, frankly, others that could use more composters, because it would be better for our environment instead of running around a big lorry to collect their grass clippings. So we wanted to find a way to encourage people to recycle as well. So there was a financial imperative, there was an environmental imperative, and at the end of the day, we've ended up with a scheme that gives people that flexibility. Now, every local authority in Warwickshire, all of them charge for green waste. No question at all about that. So, and ours is probably in the lowest quartile at the moment at £20. And who knows where we'll go in the budget next year. But the point is, I'd rather give people the chance to have green waste than just cut the service altogether, take the savings and not offer it at all, because that was the other alternative, is to cut the contract down and take out the service for green waste. It wasn't an easy call, though.
Or put up a council tax and people are having to pay for it for a service.
And they're legally obliged. Yeah. We're legally obliged to pay our council tax. You're not legally obliged to take a green waste bin. That's a choice you make because you've got a garden or a particular need, or you prefer that service.
But again, you know, real adult conversation. You know, if you look at the whole waste management sector, you know, you know, down the road in Coventry, you know, bins haven't been collected for months.
Oh, I know.
But it's simply where the market is there's very, you know, the way the waste management the waste management sector was 8 years ago, when there were a number of different companies in there. The problem is now is that the way that everything's gone through, and obviously, you know, the process follows, it's a really hard market to be in. And as councils, you know, we can't sit there and say, okay, the price now has gone from, you know, 3.5 million quid to 5.5 million quid. You know, we can't afford to do that. We start, like you say, we have to collect waste. For our residents, and our residents expect that in their council tax.
They do, and but, we and we've got the climate change imperative where we're driving really hard to drop to deal with our climate carbon emissions, and recycling and waste management collection is a big part of our carbon emissions. So,
but on that, you know, it's a simplicity for residents. So now, rather than we sit there every morning and separate, you know, bottles, tins, paper, you know, and all the rest, I stick it into a, you know, one bin. So, so, you know, purely from a Rich House point of view,
I like it
because I sit there, I'm going to separate it, I stick it into what into one bin, which is a
bigger
bin.
Hey, did you see that app? Did you see, I forwarded you the WhatsApp with the app. So this new app we've got, it's coming your way. You can load it down on your smartphone. 75% of our residents have smartphones. And you can have it on your smartphone, and it will send you notifications to remind you which bin you're going to put it. With huge help for me, because I feel like all the other guys in the close look to me to see which bin to go at. Because
I'm looking at everybody
else. The councillor. Not a good call. Not a good call. And at least I'll get, you know, this app will help. But more than that, it's a because it's a digital platform, we're already adding other council services that you can access through this app. And it'll be brilliant, for example, Jan, with your county council hat on, if we could book our slot at the Princess Drive Household Waste Recycling Centre, you know, if it through the same app, and you'd be able to report if your bin isn't collected, etc. So we're hoping this is a step in the right direction with a digital service to our residents. Interesting. Jan, I'm going to come back to you in just a sec, Rich, and I think you're off the hook here. I want to have a yak to you about Riverside House. And particularly because you're in charge of our assets as well, you've got a big job, and where we, you know, people might think we've been doing nothing for 3 years, where are we going as a council for our own council office provision? What's the thinking behind the scenes at the moment, and when are we going to see some decisions on this?
Well, I can't give too much away at the moment, but we are still reviewing Riverside House. It's too big for what we need. The pandemic has shown, and funny enough, the statistics show that there's been more productivity from our staff working from home than there was when they were in the office. So I think there was always a fear that you have to look over people to make sure that they're working, and that myth's been actually blown away. So we got several options, and I will be bringing a paper forward in August to look at several options. So the council owns quite a few assets, but they're smaller buildings. So we're looking at, we could possibly put different teams in different areas, but then you don't get the full team image. We have one or two assets that are slightly bigger within the council ownership. The total council ownership is what I'll say, where we could maybe move the headquarters of Riverside House to another location within Leamington, and then maybe have a front door within the town, maybe somewhere like the pump rooms, and rather than having a reception, having a...
So how does that work? Is, you know, if I'm a resident and I want to, I don't know, come and have a chat with a planning officer, what do I do? I want to physically sit down and have a chat with somebody. How does that work?
Well, some of the things we're looking at is maybe having some computer terminals.
Okay.
And rather than having somebody sitting behind a desk and making a phone call, having like floor walkers, like, you know, when you go into a bank and somebody meets you and says, well, can I help you? Oh, you want to pay that in? You can use the self-service, and they show you how to do it. So maybe do something like that. A lot sort of... more interactive. So if somebody wants to talk to a planner, could maybe have a terminal. It's very, very early at the moment.
Yeah.
We could have a terminal, they could log them on, get a Teams.
Gotcha.
Get your planner on Teams.
So you're taking a hybrid approach. It's the person to meet them and concierge them and assist them, but you might then access some people online because that's...
We might not be able to do it, but these are the kind of things we're thinking about.
But it's changed. I mean, the way that people do things has changed as well. I mean, the whole thing of going, I mean, you talk about banks. You know, if I look at Kenilworth, you know, the majority of banks in Kenilworth now are, you know, closing. You know, because and people, you know, there's a few that are there, but predominantly the way that people interact with a service is totally different to you know, where my mum would go in and sit there and wait 20 minutes for someone to take a ticket and wait to sit, it just doesn't happen anymore.
Mm.
You know, if you look at the people out here, you know, Mill Street, you know, and what they do, it's on their phones, it's interactive, it's
you're right there, Richard, but you would not believe how many people are still wanting to use cash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We introduced a new bus service around Indigo Plus, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cashless. The amount of emails I get, but so-and-so doesn't want to pay cash, by card, they want to use cash. And so people don't want to give out their bank details.
Yeah.
They've got their money stuffed under a mattress, so they want to use the cash.
Fair enough.
So there's still a need, and we've got to be able to include everybody.
But we have that in our car parks. So if you look at our car parks, you know, some car parks will still take coins. You know, but you know, if you go out now and
They're driving me nuts. Oh, I mean, just they're taking so long to ring through. And I know I'm going to get Moira Ann Granger in to have a chat about that as well. But who's our, you know, is a fellow member of our cabinet that looks after our neighbourhood services. But, you know, just the technology has got to get quicker. I can't stand that. It drives me completely potty.
Yeah, me as well.
So, yeah, I'll be complaining to my local councillor. And on the assets side, the other piece is Riverside House itself. I mean, we've got... it is in its name. It's on the riverside.
Yeah.
It's a major opportunity for.
We've got some really good plans that we're looking at to develop that site.
Mm-hmm. Are we cutting down all the trees and no affordable houses?
No, there's going to be affordable houses. I was a new councillor in 2019.
Yeah.
I was new into politics. I wasn't even a member of a political party.
Oh, he was innocent.
One of the first things that I came across was the Riverside House as it was.
Yeah.
And the first thing I said was, how can we expect other people to put 40% affordable when we don't do it ourselves?
Mm.
So it's almost the opposite to what we're doing with Milverton Homes.
Mm.
We're setting an example.
Exactly.
We have to set an example and say, look, there is a solution. This is what we have to do.
Yeah.
So absolutely, it will have at least 40%.
And it's in an amazing location there with Adelaide Road and the sort of club land and those, the Armadan Muslims. There's a whole bunch of really interesting organisations. But there's also the opportunity, I understand.
Bridge over the river.
We could get back into Victoria Park.
Yeah.
We could get on along the riverbank, maybe connecting all the way through to Warwick if we move our athletics track. It could be a wonderful sort of green corridor.
But that's where I think that the most important thing from a district point of view is that connectivity between the different towns that we've got.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, that link to Warwick and then, you know, the K2L thing to Kenilworth, it's really important that we link up, you know, the different towns within there. So because that way then that the sense of place means that you're not, you know, that you've got the whole breadth there in terms of what you're doing, the facilities from there.
Very, very important. K2L, by the way, is the Kenilworth to Leamington cycleway, which the County Council is advancing and we're supporting.
Yeah.
But it'll enable safe cycling from Kenilworth to Leamington and back. No problems for you and your mates, which is a good way to get to the pub. But more than that, it's where I was today was amazing. So it was out at the Lias line, which is just at the moment on the old railway line on the other side of the Fossway, connecting as a cycleway. £5.1 million of money's gone in there to build a cycleway so that we can run on that all the way out to Draycott Water and onto Rugby.
That's brilliant.
And HS2 are putting in a new bridge, or returning the old railway bridge to get over the Fossway, so we can bring that cycleway all the way into New Bog Common, through Bradford Semley and into New Bog Common.
Great.
Which is just, if you think about how that's going to open up access to the countryside and in a really safe way, adding on to those other provisions to Kenilworth and to our other towns.
Yeah.
But I do think we don't make enough of our river. You know, the Leam and the Avon seems to be tucked away in our towns, and yet they were such a feature. And I think Riverside House presents an opportunity to maybe re-engage with our riverfront.
I think so. There's some rough plans going on, but first of all, we have to relocate the staff.
Yeah.
Which, I say, we would like to have that done within the next 12 months.
Yeah.
For certain, and then that's going to free up the site to be redeveloped.
Come forward with these ideas.
Yeah.
Watch this space. We'll have you back and have more on that. So we are this week preparing feverishly for the Commonwealth Games. What are you looking forward to, Rich?
I'm looking forward to the cycle race. So I'm looking forward to that, you know, starting in Warwick, because I think that'd be really good and watching that. I'm looking forward to seeing the bars. I think it's the whole excitement around it. You know, it's the whole buzz that you get, and it's the whole community thing again that you get across the district. So it doesn't matter, you know, wherever you are, you can come in and be involved in it. You know, if it's cycling, you can perch up somewhere.
We've got a couple of fan zones being set up, haven't we? Yeah, and what's good with you?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. It's looking really promising. A lot of interest. Unfortunately, I've got a holiday that was postponed from last year, brought forward to this year.
You're gonna miss it.
I'm off on a cruise for 2 weeks.
Well, we'll send you all the pictures of us having a good time at Woodgin. Yeah. So there's two fan zones. One is going to be in the Pumper and Gardens. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, big screens, great audio, and lots of entertainment, places to eat and so on, and things for the kids to do. And the other one also in Market Square in Warwick. So, you know, it's a great place to sort of get the vibe and the feel of being. And for the opening ceremony in particular, there's going to be a lot of extra support there. I don't know if you're getting a chance, but I'm going to sign on as a volunteer to get in there too. I don't want to miss out. I think this is going to be massive fun. But it's important for our towns too. And I know we're winding up fairly shortly, but I think what the Commonwealth Games has offered us is a chance to, you know, grab a legacy, you know, out of this. And I don't know if you saw that photo of me. I was the best thing I have ever, ever done as a councillor was to be invited down to Victoria Park to open the new play equipment down there, which is, if you haven't been, I want to see, it's brilliant. I wanted to climb that tower. Yeah. I mean, I really did. But they gave me these vouchers for free ice cream. And there's this queue of like 2 foot high people coming up, and just the sheer joy on their face of getting an ice cream voucher and then being able to go ballistic in this play area. Yeah. It's been worth all the hate emails I've had. Yeah. Absolutely worth every single one of them. And Minnie Mangat, our chairman, was down there. She did a great job. We had a good go on the swings, she and I. But that was stunning. That's gonna be one of the legacies. But we're seeing things like the Leamington Spa Station forecourt is finished. Pretty much. I think it's next week it's being opened. Now, I know for some people it doesn't look very different. Believe me, the railings are going to be painted, by the way, before the games. But the underpass is very, very different. It's the first platform step for what's coming. So in a future podcast, I want to talk more about what we're doing around active travel in Leamington and Warwick and Kenilworth, and particularly what that transport hub is likely to look like with a new bus station in Bath Place, and what the Bath Street Cycle Active Travel Network will mean for Clement Street and our opportunities to bring forward new and exciting developments in that part of Leamington.
The great thing about the games is, especially after the pandemic, it now reminds people Warwick and Leamington exists. We're open for business, and it's going to be shown, you know, around the world. So it really does do fantastic for the area and the business and everything. So it's a great flag to fly in it.
It is. Well, it's what, 5,000-10,000 maximum, I'm told, a day for the whole 9 days coming into Leamington. If, you know, local coffee shops are not able to sell a few mockers and you know, toasted sandwiches, I'll be stunned. And the pubs do well, I hope. But look, thank you very much, guys, for coming in and for being so candid. I'm sure I'll drag you back in again. The whole idea with Local Point is, just as we've done here, is to shoot the breeze. The next one, we're going to provide details of where people can email in their questions, and we'll do our very best to try and answer them, and I'll bring in different participants to help me with that task. I think it's a great way of hopefully trying to put some context to some of the really tough decisions that are being made. And I'm not just going to have councillors in here. I'm going to hopefully have the new chair of the Leamington Transformation Board when they're finally appointed, whomever that may be. It gives us a chance to hear from different voices, maybe also from some of our local charities, maybe even from Nigel here at 1 Mill Street. I can maybe persuade him to come in and have a chat as well, because Make Good Grow is doing fantastic things in our community as well. But thank you very much for your time and for being so candid. To our listeners, please we'll post up the details of which email address to use, but we would love to hear from you with your questions, and we'll give you the Local Point. Thank you.